Welcome to New Books in Psychoanalysis. This is Philip Lance, your host for today's podcast. Today I'm interviewing Jonathan House. And this is a little bit different kind of an interview because Jonathan's not exactly the author of this book that we're looking at today. The book is La Planche, An Introduction. Although he has a lot to do with the book he'll tell you, but a translator, a publisher, an editor. The book is has an introduction by Dominic Scarfone and then some kind of seminal articles by La Planche and Pontali. So we'll tell you more about what this book is all about in a moment. But meanwhile, Jonathan teaches courses on Freud and La Planche in the Psychoanalytic Studies Program of Columbia University's Institute for Comparative Literature and Society. And at Columbia, he is also on the faculty of the Department of Psychiatry. And also, I guess, at Columbia, he's he's a training and supervising analyst of the Center for Psychoanalytic Training. So welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Thanks so much, Philip.
And so why don't you tell us about these different hats you wear and kind of like what you do for a living exactly?
Well, I have a long history. I'll skip over the first part. I used to be an internist, then I took a year off, which turned into a decade to work for the labor movement, and then decided to go back and do another residency in psychiatry with the notion of becoming an analyst. The psychiatry, I figured if the psychoanalysis didn't work out, I could always sell drugs. But it turns out I rather like psychiatry, but I like psychoanalysis more. So I did go on with psychoanalytic training at Columbia's Institute, Center for Psychoanalytic Training and Research. And I've been very lucky. And then to bring it all the way up to date, for reasons we may get into, I got involved in translating La Planche and got to know him and eventually was appointed by him to the council that runs the Fondation La Planche, that was funded by La Planche in his lifetime and again in his will. And the goal of the foundation is to see that his work is translated and better known throughout the world. In effect, I am responsible for the translations into English of his work, which is about half done, maybe a little more, a little less, about half. So, and I skipped what I do for a living, at the moment.
Yeah.
I earn my bread by the practice of psychoanalysis and psychotherapy, and that's my full-time job, which I also adore.
Yeah, I saw your online. You charge really nice high rates. I'm gonna be able to charge and collect those rates someday. Maybe because you have high overhead right there on what's Fifth Avenue or like you're across the street from the metro.
Yeah. I mean, it's I'm on Fifth Avenue right in the middle of all the museums. I don't know that that's what allows me to charge the rates. no matter what I put online, it's always a negotiation.
Yeah.
But there's a story I sometimes tell about that when I was, I've done a lot of different teaching at the medical school, the residency and analytic institute, down at the regular university. But one thing I did for a little while was each new medical student has in their first year four sessions, I guess it is, or encounters with a psychiatrist. And there was this working class young woman who I was seeing for these 4-hour encounters. And I told her I was not only a psychiatrist, but a psychoanalyst. And she said, well, what's that exactly? With a certain raising of the eyebrow that indicated to me that she already had an idea of what it was. And what I said to her is, Well, I, it's sort of like being a Rolls-Royce mechanic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's true that my analytic work, psychotherapy work, is what supports my teaching, and, you know, none of which gets paid, and the supervision and all of that is not. And now the writing and the translating and the publishing enterprise itself.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll get back to that. And I get that question a lot too, when people say, well, aren't you, if I, you know, I say I'm in training to be a psychoanalyst, well, but aren't you already a PhD in clinical psychology and a psychotherapist? And I say, yes. But I like to say that it's kind of the gold standard of psychotherapy, although I'm sure some people would take issue with that. And it's not, that's what we like to think it is, but there's some controversy out there. But let's get back to make sure our listeners know about this book we're going to talk about today. So can you tell us the different, tell us about this book and like the breakdown of different parts of it and who's involved in putting it together,
so this
was, including who is LaPlanche and who is, you know, that too.
All right. Well, a couple of questions. I'll go back to the who is LaPlanche, which is an easier one than what psychoanalysis that you were asking. That question always reminds me of when people ask me, are you a Freudian? And I never know what to answer to that. So I generally say yes. And then we take it from there. I'm a believer in the conflict theory of the advance of knowledge. So to the book was the third book, I think, that the Unconscious in Translation published. And the foundation thought that this should be an early one, because the central text of the book is a text by Dominique Scarfone, and it was which was initially published in a series of books that came out in France called Psychoanalysts of Today, and each one was devoted to one analyst, and there would be a essay about his work, and then selections, excerpts here and there. The essays tended to be pretty good. I thought the notion of having little excerpts, you know, was a bizarre way to present anyone's work. But at any rate, Dominique wrote this wonderful essay. It was at least 15 years or more ago, so maybe 20 years. So LaPlanche was still alive and developing his work. Now, it doesn't quite cover the full range of LaPlanche's work, but it's a lovely essay.
And he wrote that in French. And
it was.
Did he himself translate it into English, or someone?
The person who translated is someone he's worked with and I've worked with, is Dorothée Bonnegal-Katz, a French woman, an analyst who lives and works in London. She's terrific. She's translated a bunch of Dominique's stuff. And so she did that translation, plus the third part of the book, which is an article LaPlanche wrote as an introduction to Beyond the Pleasure Principle. That's perhaps one of the last pieces he ever wrote. And then one of the first pieces he ever wrote, which I guess we'll get into, is one that I translated. So my notion was we were going to do Dominique's piece as the center, and then to take a very early piece by LaPlanche, actually by LaPlanche and Pontalis, and then take the latest work that he'd done. And so that's...
Okay, So let's see. You called it the central part of the book was Dominique's essay, which is kind of it's a broad overview, introduction to LaPlanche. I had a question about that, but I can't remember what that was. But okay, so So let's go. Let's move away from the book for a moment, and we'll get back to it. And I, because I think it's very interesting. This pub, would you call it a little publishing enterprise called The Unconscious in Translation, and that makes you kind of the general editor publisher. Say a little more about what that project is about.
Okay, and I realize I've skipped over your question of who's LaPlanche and why is it important. Do we come back to that? But actually, the two go together because I started the publishing house because so little, almost none, of LaPlanche's work had been translated into English. There was, of course, you know, the book that everyone has, you know, The Language of Psychoanalysis that he wrote and that came out in 1957, I guess, in French and in 1970 in English. You know, that's, you know, sort of every language and country analysts and scholars in all sorts of areas use that. But other than that, and his major text from 1970, which it was LaPlanche alone, he was largely unknown, a couple of exceptions, but largely untranslated. So my notion at first was let's get LaPlanche translated, and then a little bit more grandiose, the notion is first LaPlanche and maybe later others that works by psychoanalysts and by those in philosophy of mind, cognitive science, that should be in English and should be available to us Anglophones that have not been translated. I wanted to try and translate and publish, and obviously not me doing all the translating, but that's why I set up The Unconscious in Translation. In other words, the notion was that there's a lot of stuff that is going to get translated. Andre Green is going to get translated. Lacan is going to be fully translated, and in fact, various translations. So this is the notion of translating what wouldn't otherwise be translated into English.
And so what qualifies you, I'm asking this kind of funny because what qualifies you to translate from French into English? How did you learn it French, in other words?
Oh, well, it's an awfully good question. The straightforward answer is nothing. Here's how it started. I was in my first year of candidacy. We had a very rigorous course with Freud and reading most of the standard edition. At least it was assigned, although, you know, like everyone else, you sort of get to it a bit later, you know, reading it for the second, i.e. first time sometime. But at any rate, I was quite disappointed that I was still really befuddled by a lot of Freud. And one of the central things I was having a hard time with, that it seemed to me Freud had a hard time with, was the question of sexuality in many directions. It was easy to pick out parts to admire and yet easier to pick out parts to criticize. But it didn't feel like I could get my arms around it. And then someone tipped me off to the article that initially came out in English. It was written in French, but it was an article in French published in 1964 by LaPlanche and Pontalis, which it's as if The Language of Psychoanalysis, that book, was almost the research for this paper that was
first. Okay, and this paper is the one that's in the book we're talking about today, yes, just to keep that in mind of the
listeners. Although its first title was in English, was Fantasy and the Origins of Sexuality, which is quite a fair title for it. The title in French is different and more fun. It's Primal Fantasies, Fantasies of Origins, Origins of Fantasy. It's even more fun in French. Anyway, I just read the English version, thought it was great, but I was still sort of confused and figured I ought to read the French version. I tried to read the French version, and it was really too hard for me. My French wasn't good enough. So I couldn't just drink it in the way I can English. So I actually spent a couple of years working at nights and translated that essay. And then in 2002, I sent my efforts to La Planche. And that's how a conversation began with him. By then, I'd read some other of his work as well. There was an excellent translation, although we've redone it, of New Foundations for Psychoanalysis, which just came out in 2017. But the initial translation, almost right after he wrote it in 87, was done by David Macy, a terrific translator. At any rate, I developed a correspondence with La Planche and eventually took on translating his most recent work, which came out, I guess, in 2011 in English, 2007 in French. The English title is Freud and the Sexual, where sexual is a new word in French and meant to indicate basically polymorphous perverse sexuality, the infantile sexuality, the expanded sense of that Freud gives the notion of sexuality.
Okay, so that's keeping us close to this question of why is La Planche important? Sexuality keeps coming up, and he really put sexuality at the center of the psychoanalytic project. And maybe you can say more about that, but I wanted to also go back to, you mentioned the language of psychoanalysis, which people who are new to the field or some candidates might even know what that book is. It's kind of an encyclopedia, right, or a dictionary of psychoanalysis. But would you say it's very, I don't think I realized when I used to consult it, how is it in a particularly La Planche and La Pontali take on Freud, or does it try to be kind of neutral in terms of ways of understanding Freud?
I think that while I wouldn't even call it a dictionary or an encyclopedia, those are fair comments at it. They're really small little essays and an attempt to give a sense of the meaning of words in Freud's work. So like all of La Planche, in some ways, like French psychoanalysis in all of its variations, quite generally, there's a much greater emphasis on starting out with Freud and moving on from there. So this is more the explication du texte in the sense of, here's how Freud uses the word, here's what it means in Freud. So neutral, yes, to the extent that anything can be. And then there's also even the little essays, of course, are translated into English, a brilliant translation by Donald Nicholson Smith. But, you know, one could raise questions about every detail of the work and the translations, much like Strachey's translation raises all sorts of questions. But the centerpiece of La Planche is definitely some notion, if you want to use a Lacanian notion, of a return to Freud. In some ways, one could question whether Lacan is really a return to Freud. He takes off from Freud and goes in very creative directions. A more scholarly approach to understanding Freud, it comes from La Planche and, you know, La Planche and Pontalis. And it's a project, in a sense, that La Planche did continued in two ways. First, in his own developing theory, the centerpiece is that New Foundations for Psychoanalysis in 87. But in addition to his own work and developing theorizing, he was the head of the group who over 30 years fully translated all of Freud's work from the German into French, making good use of Strachey's translation into English, but having the advantage of coming after the standard edition, and in addition, having access to much more of Freud's, many more of Freud's texts than Strachey and his team had. So Laplanche, who died in 2012, got to see the last volumes of that published, except for the index, I think. His relationship to Freud is a deep one. The phrase he uses, Laplanche, is he wants to put Freud to work. And what that, one way to understand that is something I remember, I think, I'm not misquoting him, Roy Schaefer once said, there isn't a single page of Freud on which he isn't profoundly wrong. And yet, you know, there's another of the great Freud scholars, incidentally, right? Roy Schaefer. And yet, where he's wrong, he's often both asking new questions that are still questions, and even, this is more me than Roy, and even where he's profoundly and obviously wrong, sometimes the answers he's giving are still the best ones we have. So if you take that paradox for a second, the question becomes, Freud was an awfully bright fellow and he had some very good ideas. So if he's going way off the track, there must be some reason that this rather smart fellow is saying contradictory and foolish things. And God knows he says contradictory and foolish things. So if we don't just take that and dismiss that stuff, but say, wait, there's something interesting here because he's trying to answer something, and maybe there's something about the answer, something about the question that makes it quite hard to answer. And if we get to that, for instance, what's special about sexuality might be a good example, we can find out why Freud is having such a problem, maybe we can take a step beyond what he was able to do.
Yeah, and that's what Laplanche does. And I have to say, as I've begun sort of dipping into Laplanche, it's been really exciting to me to sort of rediscover, maybe discover really for me, for the first time, how Freud makes sense in a way he didn't when I was originally studying during candidacy, and especially around sexuality. So in my sessions with clients, when sexuality begins to arise, it's exciting because not only it's fun to talk about sexuality, but because I feel like we're actually getting to the unconscious and the way that Freud understood it, at least as Laplanche says Freud understood it. So let's say that somebody like me wants to really begin learning Laplanche. What would be a course of study? So obviously this book we're talking about today, Laplanche, An Introduction, seems like it would be a good place to begin. But what would you kind of actually laid out for me some ways of going into it in an email you sent to me at the beginning when I first contacted you. But can you give us some thoughts about how to learn Laplanche?
Yes, I would say three possibilities, or anyway, one, the simplest really is to get his last collection of essays. In French, it was Sexual that I mentioned, and the subtitle was La Sexualité élargie au sens freudien. So translating it, sexuality enlarged in the Freudian sense. And it's a collection of his essays from 2000 to 2006. And he only wrote, you know, very little after that. It's in English. It's published by the Unconscious in Translation with the title Freud and the Sexual, with sexual in italics to show that it has an unusual meaning here. In that book, I generally recommend about four chapters 1, 2, 5, and 10, to then each one is about 20 pages, maybe 25. big print, large margins, much space between the lines. I mean, it's not a ponderous read. Some of it's really fun. Laplanche can, in his late work, as this was, is a lot more fun to read than in some ways than his earlier work, which is denser. So that would be you sort of starting and get a sense of where Laplanche arrives by the time he's integrated all of his study over 40, 50 years. Another way to do it would be to begin sort of when Laplanche takes off. Well, a little bit of history for Laplanche maybe here. Laplanche grew up in Burgundy, the son of a wealthy wine merchant. During the war, he helped out in the resistance, carrying messages in the handlebars of his bike, both in Paris and in Burgundy. He was the second son, so he was sort of sent off to Paris to become an intellectual, and went to the most intellectual of schools that prepares for the École Normale Supérieure, and he went into philosophy, where he sort of partners in that École Normale Supérieure with Pontalis. There, each two of them would have an older student who was helped them as graduate students. And their older sort of tutor, still also a graduate student, was Althusser. It was an amazing time, with Merleau-Ponty was one of their teachers, Sartre. It was a quite remarkable time during and especially just after the war. So Laplanche gets interested in psychoanalysis, goes into analysis with Lacan. Lacan tells him, well, if you want to, be an analyst, you got to become a psychiatrist. So in a couple of years' time, Laplanche, in addition to being, a major philosopher, becomes a psychiatrist, spends a year at Harvard, too. And in the early 60s, in about 1959-60, he and a number of other people who had been in the same circle as Lacan and had been his student and his analysand, breaks with him intellectually. But as he once said to me, Lacan was very tolerant of intellectual differences until one broke with him politically, or one could say until Lacan took off politically. Mm-hmm. So by 1960, for instance, Laplanche, at a major conference on the unconscious, takes the position that the unconscious is not structured like a language, just to be said how early. But the break with Lacan really comes a couple of years later when Lacan founds his own school. And there's a whole long history won't get into. But at any rate, he writes then these two things with Pontalis, The Language of Psychoanalysis, the dictionary or encyclopedia, and this essay that's in the book that we're talking about. In 1970, he writes Life and Death in Psychoanalysis. Then there follow ongoing lots of essays that are published. Laplanche is teaching and has a seminar at the Sorbonne. I think it was at Paris 7. And his lectures are many of them. Each semester or sometimes two semesters worth of lectures were published in a series of volumes called Problematique, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, until in 87 he does a quite remarkable synthesis, which is The New Foundations. Then after that, again, continuing to publish articles and give talks and so forth, which are collected in a number of volumes, there are some other books, one on sexuality, one on après-coup, which later were called Problematique 6 and 7, And then the collections of his essays. Simultaneously, he's running the translation of Freud with the colleagues he'd been working with for 20, 30 years. I think I've gone off, but then he in France he becomes an important figure, but perhaps unlike Lacan, unlike André Green, unlike a number of important psychoanalysts and theoreticians, he doesn't found a school of his own. Maybe in part that's because his writing almost never goes into clinical cases, clinical examples even. So it may have been harder for people to rally around that. Also, his style was rather less. He didn't seem to. Not that he wasn't very firm in his opinions and could be a difficult man to work with, but he didn't seem to want to have a followership in the same way that some others did, and which incidentally I don't think is a bad idea. I think it's as a devoted Laplanche follower at the moment, I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But it's at any rate, André Green, unlike Bonzieu, unlike Lacan, unlike the fourth group, he was affiliated with of the two big institutes that are affiliated with the IPA. The one is the SPP, that's the biggest one, and then there's the APF, which is smaller and more uber intellectual kind of thing. And that was Laplanche. I'll give one other interesting note about Laplanche. After the war, he founded with Castoriadis and Claude Lefort and some others, a group called Socialism or Barbarism. And they published a journal of that under that name as well. And it was, for me, almost unbearably arcane intellectual Marxist work. At least I have a hard time with Castoriadis. And brilliant stuff, but hard to read. He was very involved on the left, both during the war and the resistance, and then after the war. That certainly isn't reflected in any direct way in his analytic writing.
Okay, I'm holding another question in mind, which I think I'll insert now, which is, so as we're understanding, how would one begin to learn Laplanche? There's reading his actual writings, many of which you've translated, beginning that book you just mentioned, The Sexual, which I can't say. And I read those chapters. Those are great. But another way to learn a theorist is by reading kind of the secondary literature, which could be, for instance, Dominic's introduction essay to the book today, Laplanche, An Introduction. But you also sent me another...
You'll have to tell me. I love Dominic's essay. I think that is, however, a bit more difficult than reading actually the primary text. He goes, because he's really covering, it's a very insightful essay into Laplanche as a whole. And I mean, it's not a simple text, Dominic's. It's brilliant.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because people listening, we don't always know who our audience is here, and some people are further along than others. But I would say, yeah, that essay by Dominic is difficult, which is why I was going to say there was another one you introduced me to, that essay in the Journal of Contemporary Psychoanalysis, written by he's an interpersonalist, but it was a kind of another sort of long essay on Laplanche. What was his name?
It is Pascal Sauvaire.
Yeah, I found that one.
He's at the William Allison White. He's great.
And that was kind of written in Americanese, I would call it, like, for those of us who grew up in sort of the that tradition. And it was an, it was another way into LaPlanche that I thought would be helpful for people.
So that would be one. And I think that one's terrific. And there's another, there in JAPA, Deborah Browning wrote also a book review that covers some overlap with Pascal's review. They're both book essays, really. And they attempt in a pretty successful way, I think, both Pascal's and Deborah's works to give a sense of some of the essential conceptual movements of LaPlanche's work. And Deborah's piece, well, it's Deborah Browning, and it's in JAPA, so it shouldn't be hard to find. And easily available, both of these, I think, if you have PEP. Maybe Pascal's is too recent, but anyone who wants it can email me, and I'd be happy to send them any of this stuff.
Let's then also take just maybe 5 minutes here, and then we'll kind of wind down with final questions. But to sort of dip a little bit into why LaPlanche is so important, and I'm trying to think of how to phrase a question that might allow you to expound a little bit about. I think one of the things I found really helpful was when I began to understand the difference between an instinct and a drive. And it seems like, am I right that LaPlanche really helped more than maybe anybody in helping us really begin to think about why that difference is so important? Because I wasn't taught that difference in my first year of candidacy about.
Remember, it was entirely erased in the Anglophone universe, much less so in France. So that in the standard edition, there are the word, two German words are translated with one English word. So trieb, which is drive, is translated as instinct, and instinct is translated as instinct. And I think you're right that LaPlanche and Pontalis, because I think you can almost find it, all of the basis for the distinction begins to be elaborated in the language of psychoanalysis with him and Pontalis. But without getting into that deeply, I think you bring us back then to what is sexuality, the notion that drives refer to sexual drives and instincts to something else. And it's important to make the distinction, and that by and large, Freud is consistent about the distinction, although he doesn't understand the origin of the distinction, and he keeps trying to mush the two together. But he rarely uses the word instinct, though not never. He uses it in a particular way. To go in many directions here, but let's go back to something you raised at the beginning, the importance of sexuality. And what LaPlanche and Pontalis do, and what LaPlanche does, is not only to clarify the distinction between instinct and drive, but to point out the problems Freud had. Just quickly, let me say, so where is sexuality initially in Freud? Up until 1897, up until he says, writes that letter of the equinox, September 21st, 1897, and he says, I've given up my neurotica. I no longer believe my neurotica. And what was his neurotica? His neurotica was his early seduction theory, in which all the neuroses of defense, hysteria, and a couple of others, have their origin in a child undergoing a sexual approach by an adult, either pleasant or unpleasant, as the case may be, resulting, he thought, in different neuroses. That the children then were without sexuality. This is before infantile sexuality, up till 1897, and sexuality appears in children, in humans, in the seduction theory, in an intersubjective way. It's the adult who brings sexuality to the child long before instinctual sexuality, in other words, puberty, comes about. Then he realizes, Freud does, that, wait a second, this doesn't work. There are many people who are hysterics, but who didn't suffer sexual abuse as a child. Although he doesn't give up on the notion that those who did, you know, that it is a cause of problems to be sexually abused as a kid, he never gives up that. But he has to give that up for all the reasons he lists in that letter. And then he's kind of stuck, right? Because his notion is that up until the end of his life, only what is sexual can be repressed. And it's repression that creates the unconscious. So what's a poor boy to do? Freud is kind of stuck here. He needs to somehow have sexuality in children. And if it doesn't come from the outside, it must somehow come from the inside. That's why he says in that famous letter, "Now I'm thrown back on heredity. You know, somehow it must be innate." So, but notice what he's trying to do. He's trying to biologize sexuality, and that's what he does from then on. And in addition, thus biologize the unconscious.
And that's where he went astray, I guess. Would LaPlanche call that a going astray?
Yes, and there's the great LaPlanche text, which have translated. In fact, Donald Nicholson Smith translated it for us, which is Problematique 7. And it was initially published under a variety of titles, but its subtitle has consistently been the biologizing going astray of sexuality in Freud. And Freud loses track of the intersubjective aspect of the origin of sexuality and thus of the origin of the unconscious. So you can see how central this notion is. And is there one major contribution of LaPlanche, it's that. And the names that it runs under are, on the one hand, the general theory of seduction. So instead of abandoning the seduction theory, LaPlanche suggests Freud should have generalized it. And the relationship of a child and the caregiver, the attachment relationship, is a relationship between an infant who has no unconscious and an adult who does, with the unconscious being understood as quintessentially sexual. Then, of course, the question of what is sexual and infantile sexuality comes up. But that's one name, the general theory of seduction. And the other name that comes late in his work, but for the same body of concepts, is the fundamental anthropological situation. And anthropological here, in the sense that Kant might use it, or that is the study of man. What is it to be human? What is it to be a subject? And the fundamental situation is, again, the child who has little, is only beginning to acquire an unconscious in relationship with, dependent on, caretakers and a culture, but caretakers in particular, who have an unconscious, in the sense of a repressed unconscious, that is sexual through and through. So that is LaPlanche's contribution phrase.
I think that probably doesn't exactly explain for people who are newer to this, but it gives them a taste of what we get into, and the very important, as I've begun to understand it, difference between the instinctual aspects of sexuality, which a lot of us, I think, have thought that is sexuality, and the drive-related components of or dimension of sexuality, which is an inner subjective psychic experience that comes from the other. And I guess it's so important to begin to make that distinction in terms of where it leads us in terms of how to understand what we're doing as psychoanalysts. And it's very, it ends up being very different from the object relations kind of approach to the unconscious, as I'm beginning to see and as I learn LaPlanche. But let's see. I'm thinking last night I was at a Rigoletto, the LA opera, in which there's this seduction of a girl by this duke. And I heard the lady behind me talking about how in those days these seductions were called seductions, but nowadays would call them rape, at least in terms of what happened in this opera. But it was, I thought of LaPlanche last night.
Let me comment on that. There's a wonderful, in that book, which I is a good place to begin, Freud and the Sexual, there's a brief essay called Sexual Crime, in which LaPlanche directly addresses what I'll call the Rigoletto question. He says, look, here I am, someone who thinks that the origin of the human subject, the origin of sexuality, comes because of the imposition of adult sexuality on the infant and child, unconscious though it may be, as well as, of course, anything conscious, but the key thing being the unconscious, the loving engagement, the attachment relationship, which is parasitized by the adult's sexual unconscious. So, am I saying, LaPlanche asks rhetorically, that every loving relationship between a mother and a child is a sexual crime? And also asks the question, is all crime sexual? And so it's a delightful piece. It goes back to some of the stuff that happened in, you know, Freud's study group, the Wednesday night study group in Vienna in those first years. And where Freud talks about seduction, where he says the father innocently seduces the daughter, and he uses the word, you know, innocent almost three times in rapid succession, you know, toward later than her having sexuality and masturbating, whereas the mother, he is presented in just the opposite sense. It's very guilty. So it's a perfect example of Freud, where he's being incredibly insightful and discussing seduction, and yet incredibly wrong and stuck in his sexist, you know, phallocentric universe. And so he makes this leap forward while he's simultaneously spoiling it, as it were. And so it's a delightful little, I don't know, 10, 15 page essay by LaPlanche on exactly that subject.
I had no idea when I brought that up. At least I don't think I did. But is that in your book, The Sexual, the one with the
10 Freud and the Sexual. I think it's chapter 8.
Okay. I didn't read that one. I will, after having seen Rigoletto, I'll go read that one. And that one last question, because I can't help asking this before we sort of wrap up here. This confusion of tongue, this, that Ferenczi talks about, where the child, the adult's sexuality, leans on the child's affection, and there's a confusion of tongues in this intersubjective happening between these two. The word tongues brings up the word languages, and is that why LaPlanche and Pontalise named it the language of their book, The Language of Psychoanalysis, because psychoanalysis...
You've got to blame that one on Donald Nicholson Smith. Their title is the vocabulary of psychoanalysis. But look, language is a big question. A linguist, you know, Lacan and some of the other French think of linguistics, called it the pilot science for psychoanalysis. The whole structuralist tendency. That's not LaPlanche or Pontalise or the others. It doesn't mean that language isn't profoundly important. But Ferenczi, so for instance, LaPlanche talks a good deal about Ferenczi because of the, as you point out, the very obvious overlap between especially that paper from, what is it, was published in 33 or something, the confusion of tongues, and the notion of the adult speaking the language of passion and the child not speaking it. So the confusion of tongues is clearly a version of the fundamental anthropological situation. The question is, what are the differences and so forth? And Laplanche does take that up and does talk a good deal about Ferenczi and that paper.
Yeah, so from a Laplanche perspective, what we're doing as psychoanalysts is helping the client to find a language for his or her unconscious, which was originally constituted by this seduction scene.
By seduction and repression, however inadvertent, however loving. It constituted in the attachment situation, the attachment relationship, which can be wonderful or rotten. That's a, Laplanche writes about the relationship then to attachment theory, which, Freud was not quite so ignorant of as sometimes presented. He talked about those things in terms of self-preservation, also in terms of the tender current, thus Freud. So he did have a notion about this relationship, which was primarily about attachment and not about sexuality. It's that relationship can't exist except if there's an adult there to take care of the baby, the child. And if there's an adult there, then there's unconscious sexuality there. Not in the kid, maybe, but certainly in the adult. What are we helping our patients do? Well, if our patients and we as subjects generally are constantly trying to give new meaning, translate elements of our unconscious, which can, then be at the origin of our most creative work and the origin of our symptoms, the origin of our dreams, to the extent that it's in the repressed unconscious, there's the human tendency, it's what makes us a subject, what makes us a human, to give meaning to it, to translate it. So what do we do with patients? Well, both present tense and then, so the here and now, but also the there and then, so not only the transference, but also one's history, can be given new meaning. That meaning may never be exhausted. The enigmatic residues of the interaction with our caretakers can never be fully translated. It always is a provocation to further translation, further meaning. Thank God, that's what makes us curious. You could say it's, what Freud referred to as, the instinct, the research instinct, drive, really. Or I think Lacan calls it maybe Freud does, the epistemophilic drive. The desire to understand, the desire to know.
It does bring us, you were talking about translation there, translating the unconscious, and which is the name of your project, The Unconscious and Translation, which is my final question because we're over time, but if people want to buy some of your books, they can go onto Amazon. That's where we usually go, right? But they can also go directly to your website of The Unconscious and Translation. And then, but does it cost more if they buy directly from you, or does it cost?
No. It costs the same or always less, really. It's the website is uitbooks.com. It's Unconscious in Translation, uitbooks.com. And at the moment, you can get a 20% discount off of everything with the coupon code word summer. And there's almost some kind of sale going on. And it certainly would be nicer for me because Amazon takes such a big cut.
Okay. Well, I think we all want to support psychoanalytic publishing projects. So
thank
that's
you.
A little... plug for that. So we're going to wrap it up, and I just want to thank everybody for listening today. Hopefully you found it very useful. We're here at the New Books in Psychoanalysis podcast. Check out our website and feel free to email me with your comments and questions. Thanks a lot, Jonathan, for doing this today.
My pleasure.